I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Buddy, we got a great one today, you know, for a change. And this time, I finally mean it. Judd Legum, who puts out the Four Times weekly newsletter, Popular Information, joins me. And yes, Popular Information is popular. Over 320,000 subscribers, including me. And today, Judd talks about Elon Musk and how Musk has been using X, formerly known as Twitter, which he bought at the price of just $44 billion, which was a lot of money, even for him. But he changed the algorithm so that the posts that the random user of X will most frequently see are from Elon Musk. I don't know if you remember the tweet Musk sent out just a few days after he bought Twitter. So it was still Twitter then. The tweet he had chosen to share was a baseless conspiracy theory that the guy who hit Paul Pelosi in the head with a hammer at Pelosi's San Francisco house wasn't there to harm Nancy Pelosi, but instead the whole thing was a gay assignation. Well, Musk has continued to repost on X now all kinds of clearly phony right-wing propaganda, and that's a big part of the popular information that Judd has to share. I'm recording this on Wednesday because I'm taking a little trip tomorrow. So if something catastrophic or good or maybe of tremendous import or interest happens before we post this on Sunday morning, well, I apologize. And no doubt something will happen. In the meantime, I am hoping and praying that the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas happens. That's the thing I hope happens. And that it holds so that food and water and medical assistance can get into Gaza and a good number of hostages can be released. I've been talking about this war in my introductions and have taken it from both sides, which doesn't mean I have it right. But I will say again that October 7th was an atrocity by Hamas. I don't see how anyone could see it differently. But also that Israel's indiscriminate bombing and denial of food and water and medical aid has been an atrocity as well. Cindy McCain, the director of the World Food Program, said that northern Gaza is in a full-blown famine and it's moving its way south. I think those of you who listen to this podcast regularly know that I am a Zionist in that I believe in Israel's right to exist. But I've also said throughout my time in public life that a two-state solution is the only path forward. That seems further away than ever, but it seems like the only way forward. I hope that next time you hear from me, there will have been some progress on Gaza. In the meantime, we've got Judd Legum joining me with a great one, you know, for a change.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hey, Jed.
Hey, Al. How's it going?
Pretty good. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
I know.
You were a regular on the Al Franken show, or the radio show.
That's right.
When did you start Popular Information?
2018. So it's been almost 6 years.
And how many subscribers do you have?
320,000.
320,000. And they each pay $1,000 a month. So you're making $320 million a month.
Yeah, I'm piecing together a living. You know, sometimes it's tough to get by on just $320 million, but I'm able to handle it.
Well, it's a great newsletter. That's what you call it, right?
Yeah.
And that you get a lot of helpful information from?
4 days a week, Monday through Thursday. There's a lot of stuff going out there. So you don't have to open every single one. And okay. A lot of people don't, but you know, you'll see it and maybe the subject line catches your attention.
Okay. Well, today you wanted to talk about Elon Musk and X, I guess, formerly known as Twitter.
That's right.
When you post something now on X, you don't tweet it. What do you do it? You post it.
I think you post it. Yeah. I think it just post.
And is X a legal name? I mean, can a corporation just take a letter?
It's an interesting question. I think people brought that up when you decided to name it, that, you know, they literally, Twitter had its own lexicon. I mean, it had built itself into the dictionary and they just got rid of it and replaced it with a letter. But, you know, that's that high level thinking that you can't always understand.
Yeah, the high level thinking. Well, some of the high level thinking is he misses stuff. Now, he's amplified on X, right?
Yeah, this was reported very early on by another newsletter called Platformer. And the woman, Zoe Scheffler, she subsequently wrote a book about the whole transition. But very early on, he was upset. I think it was during the Super Bowl last year that Biden's tweet, whatever he said, was getting to more people than his tweet. So they kind of had an all hands on deck situation. The directive was that his tweets need to be seen by a lot more people. You know, since that time, you know, if you spend any time on the app, whether you follow him or not, you'll just be inundated with his messages.
So they changed the algorithms to boost his tweets?
That's right. And just showing it to pretty much anyone who uses the app, whether or not you follow him, engage in that, you know, and I think that's really changed a lot of the experience of using it for sure.
And you see a lot more right-wing stuff. It's like when Paul Pelosi was hit with a hammer by this intruder who was there to go after Nancy Pelosi. He retweets this post from somebody saying that Paul Pelosi had arranged a gay assignation, and that's what this was. That was the one that got me going, like, what the hell? This is that Paul Pelosi, that wasn't a guy coming to try to hurt Nancy Pelosi. It was a guy coming to have a gay assignation with him.
Yeah, and it's an interesting way to think about free speech in that that's how he sort of views himself as, oh, this is open. We're getting you the real information. We're not censoring you like the evil mainstream media. But then in practice, you basically take the worst kind of gutter trash rumor and then you broadcast it as if there's something to really seriously consider to, you know, 180 million people. Now, probably 100 million of those are just bots and other fake accounts, but that's still a lot of people, even once you get rid of all of those. And I think that, you know, while the usage of the platform has gone down considerably, I don't think people are really prepared for how ugly this is going to get as we get towards the election, because he's really thrown himself into league with Trump and the far right, and he's willing to promote and legitimize anything. I mean, it started with the Paul Pelosi stuff, I think was one of the first things when he kind of took over, and then it's just gone from there.
That was when I checked out on him.
Yeah.
To the extent I could, because, yeah, that was him repeating something that clearly. Okay, let's say there was a 1% chance that was true for some reason, you know, and obviously it wasn't. Boy, you don't repost that, or that's amazing. You've cited several examples of late where he is basically accusing Biden is carrying out the great replacement theory, which was something championed by the right that were trying to replace the white voters in this country with immigrants from all over the world, and they're going to vote and elect Democrats. That's the whole point of the great replacement theory.
Yeah. And you'll see this actually cited repeatedly by mass shooters as the justification for these rampages where, you know, dozens of people sometimes die.
That was like in Buffalo and El Paso.
Buffalo and El Paso, both of those shooters and the manifestos they leave behind cite this theory. And the latest variation of this, Musk has been talking about a lot, which is this accusation that Biden was committing treason by secretly chartering airplanes and flying in hundreds of thousands of, quote, illegal immigrants from Latin America to U.S. airports. And
secretly, you know, secretly
presented this as if this was this grand conspiracy that he has uncovered, I guess, just by reading these trash accounts on his social network that he bought
and reposting them
for
his 170 million followers.
That's right. And this program that he's referencing does not involve chartered flights. In fact, it specifically requires that someone who is eligible pay for their own transportation to the United States. But it's so secret that it was announced at the White House by President Biden. They released a bunch of fact sheets and reports. And if you go to the Citizenship and Immigration Services homepage, it's literally at the top of the page.
And explain what the program is.
The program is saying that instead of presenting yourself at the border, which is obviously dangerous for the migrants themselves and also kind of a chaotic situation as it gets to be very crowded, you can apply from your home country if you're from certain countries where they know that the situation there can be quite dangerous. Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela. You fill out this application. You show that you can pay for your own transportation. You also show, and this is somewhat controversial actually, that you have someone who can support you in the United States, someone that can make sure that you have housing and can help you out.
Why is that controversial exactly?
It's controversial a little bit just because now you're helping out sort of more connected and well-to-do people. Not that these people are that well-to-do, but it's sort of a financial hurdle for them to meet. But I think most people think it's a pretty good program. It's a parole program, a parole process, and it's actually a process that's been used since they created in the 50s. It's been used by every single president for different areas, except for Trump. But every other president has used it in different ways. It's a humanitarian program, but also just a way to facilitate like the orderliness in the immigration system. Anyway, when you clear all those hurdles, and it also includes a security clearance, you know, you have to go and they have to sort of see that you're not, you know, there's no record of you being a criminal and other things like that. Then you can come to the United States through this program. And after a little while, you may be even able to get a work permit. And the idea is that this would decrease the pressures at the border and also serve this humanitarian purpose. So that's what the program really is. Now, obviously, none of those people are going to be able to vote because they're not citizens. They're here on parole. And that's kind of that.
But that doesn't stop them from saying these are voters that are coming in, the great replacement, and they're going to throw the election in 24.
That's right. You know, basically, they're saying that, you know, these people are voting and you know, there's really no evidence of this. There's been audits, you know, in Georgia, they went through a huge audit. They looked through 25 years of voting records. They found, you know, a few cases where someone who was not a citizen tried to register to vote. None of them actually were able to successfully vote. But it's really 0.0000 repeating percent of voters
who try.
Who are trying to register and are told
when they're trying to register, you're not a citizen.
I mean, you can imagine fleeing, you know, this situation in, say, Nicaragua. You're fearing for your own life and your family's life. That's why you're desperate just to uproot yourself and come to the United States. You go through this extensive process of vetting, of paperwork, of identifying people to take care of you, the money to transport yourself. And then you're going to fraudulently fill out a voting application form so you can cast a single vote in an election. I mean, that's the theory. And then not only one person is doing that, but so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people would decide that that's a good trade-off, that they would come and do that for that purpose. You know, it makes no sense if you even spend 30 to 40 seconds thinking about it. That's not something that's apparently fits into Elon Musk's schedule.
But Musk is characterizing Biden as someone attempting to steal the election this way.
Yeah, and I think it fits into a whole series of false claims that Musk is making. And it's a lot of its stuff sounds familiar around absentee voting, around drop boxes, around all sorts of stuff, basically, that was the basis of January 6th and the attack on the Capitol. But this is now being kind of reconstituted.
Put out as he's stealing the 2024 election now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it seems inevitable that if Trump were to lose in 2024, he will say that it was stolen. And there will be, of course, like we saw after 2020, a big threat of, I mean, we did see violence after 2020. There'll be a significant threat. And Musk is just fanning these flames based on really nothing.
Is there other stuff that he's kind of posting, reposting, and sort of saying this is happening, the election's being stolen?
Yeah, there was one that just happened where he was, you know, and again, he doesn't come up with this. You know, he looks at the people who are just posting ridiculous stuff.
And these people would have been kicked off before.
Yeah, in fact, many of them were.
Right, and now they're allowed back on.
And now not only are they back on, but they're amplified. So it's the reverse of what you had. But basically what this claim is in the first, you know, there was a post that he said was extremely concerning, that in the first 3 months of 2024, that there were hundreds of thousands in Texas, over a million people who were registering to vote without IDs. And okay. As a result, the suggestion was that these are probably non-citizens, illegal aliens. And basically the same, kind of the same claim. So they're, I guess these were the people who they were bringing in on the flights they weren't chartering.
So which part of this is not true? How many pieces of it?
Pretty much every piece of it, once you start to dig into it. But really what it is that when you go to the DMV and you're getting your driver's license and you're registering to vote, one of the ways that you can do it is to provide your social security number. This is where things get very confusing, because in almost all cases, people with social security numbers are citizens. It's a pretty good indication that you are a citizen, that you have a social security number. There's some very rare exceptions, but for the most part, that is the case.
What are the exceptions? So we can kind of see whether this is part of a bogus deal.
It's usually kind of what we were talking about. Usually if you are a non-resident, but you are able to get a work authorization mm-hmm. for some reason, then you, in some cases, can get a social security number to facilitate your work, so that you can get jobs and things like that. You can only do that if you're legally present, obviously. So the idea that you can come in illegally and then get this social security number, that doesn't make really any sense at all.
Okay, but a person who comes in legally and gets a social security number, I guess you could say presumably could, but I don't know why they would, but...
They could, but then they go and they check it to make sure, basically this is a process. It was created by a law called the Help America Vote Act.
And that happened after the Bush v. Gore, right?
Yeah, that's right. After, after 9/11, all of that. And basically what they do is they look and they check and say, well, let's make sure this is still a good social security number. It's not somebody who's been deceased, for instance, or, just make sure that this is valid. And they send it there. Now, so obviously there's no indication when you send the social security number that you're even an immigrant at all. But what happens basically is that there's a process, and every time they check it, it's an automated process. And if you look back through the reports where they talk about how this process works, sometimes they'll send the same check more than once. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, they, in 2009, for instance, there was a DMV or a state agency in Ohio that submitted one person's Social Security number 13,824 times through this process, because they don't have it set up quite right. Now, they weren't thinking that this data was then going to be used to claim that each one of these was a illegal voter as part of a scheme to elect Biden. But eventually, this got so much attention because Musk posted it, that the Texas Secretary of State, who is a Republican, had to step in and say, you're claiming that 1.2 million people without a social security number or without a ID already are trying to register to vote only with their social security number in Texas. Actually, there's only been 57,000 people added to the rolls in that three-month period total, with IDs or without IDs. So the data is completely wrong, was never meant to be used for that purpose, but my guess is most of the people who see this tweet, this post by Musk, they never get that follow information, because Musk certainly isn't going to post it.
Oh, of course not.
And when you go back into the X app, that's not going to get, people might have posted about it, but you're probably not going to see it. So there's a lot of people probably right now, as we're having this conversation, who still think that 1.2 million people who are probably undocumented immigrants are registering to vote in Texas this year because they read this on Musk's account. So that's really an example of like the danger and the chaos we're facing, is that there could be a lot of people as we lead up to the election thinking that they have learned things that are just completely false. And, you know, we've already seen what can happen as if people get really spun up about this stuff.
Well, they're going to be spun up. Now, you also did a story about Boeing and the company that also does work for Boeing and the door that flew off, right?
That's correct.
This got chalked up by Musk as possibly happened because of DEI.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
That's helpful.
This is part of another line that DEI is destroying America. Basically, with this, there's no indication that anyone who at all benefited from any DEI program had anything to do with this door. I mean, this was just taken out of nowhere. And in fact, while there have been some efforts to try to improve the diversity at Boeing, those efforts have been not very successful. And if you look at the board, at the CEO, at the board of directors, it is almost all white men.
And when did DEI really start at Boeing? I mean, it wasn't picked up really till about 2020, and the MAX failed before that, right?
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, we've obviously been having these crashes, you know, these tragedies with the MAX for a long time. It didn't just start this year when the door fell off.
No one died from that, but some people got hurt, I understand.
Yeah, the people got hurt, and I think it's also just be a terrifying experience to go through.
Yes.
If you were flying in an airplane and the door fell off. But this one, I thought, by Musk was really disturbing, because it's a really white power type reaction to anything bad that has happened, is just grasp at straws and blame it on people who aren't white. Even when you have a company like Boeing, you know, and there's white guys who are quite competent and there's white guys who aren't competent, but this is a company that is mostly dominated by white men, for better or for worse, and that has had a horrendous track record on safety. Instead of actually thinking about that and why that occurs, you have Musk blaming DEI. And what's even more disturbing is people have not written him off because of all of this. You've got members of Congress, other influential people who are saying, oh yeah, let's look into this, and maybe we should have a hearing. Maybe we should talk more about why DEI was responsible for this door blowing off and the problems with the MAX. That's kind of the reality that he's creating and the level of influence that he does have.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Judd Lake.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
So tell me about Musk, just in general. Why has he moved to the right like this? Because he wasn't all what? Didn't he support Obama?
That's what he says. Yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely a new thing. And he definitely has a history of supporting Democrats. I think that part of it was COVID.
They shut down the Tesla plants like other plants, right?
That's right.
And he didn't like that.
He didn't like that. So I think that was part of it.
That was California. And so he's moved the big Tesla factory to Texas, right?
Yeah, he's trying to move the headquarters. I believe they still have that factory in California.
Yes.
But they moved the headquarters. You know, they moved the headquarters. And I think he also was moving the headquarters of X, you know, trying to move it all to Texas, where he feels more comfortable now, I suppose. So I think that was part of it. I think the other issue is that one of his children happens to be trans, and that has led to some sort of falling out because he was not very supportive, is my understanding of it. And he blames, I think, the left and sort of LGBTQ advocacy for this falling out with one of his children.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, that's too bad. And then I think in general, it has to do with who's willing to kind of suck up and flatter him. So I think as he's moved to the right, he gets a lot of positive reinforcement from other people as he embraces more and more extreme right-wing conspiracy theories. He sees a lot of positive reinforcement, and that just encourages him to go farther and farther and farther to the right. You just look at the people who are willing to flatter you. Now, it's an interesting evolution for someone whose main source of wealth still involves selling electric cars. And I think it's starting to, you know, he's starting to see the consequence of this is that when you are trying to sell electric cars, well, a lot of the people who might be interested may not be right-wing reactionaries. And therefore, you've seen, you know, sales decline and the stock is not having a good year. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I don't think that Musk's public image as he's gone further and further to the right is helping out that. And that's going to be a big problem for him because X as a platform is still quite powerful and he's able to use it to influence the narrative and the political dialogue. It is not making very much money. In fact, that it's losing money.
But he can afford to lose money as the world's richest man.
He can. It's just a matter of how much he's willing to do. Because like his lifestyle, you know, he doesn't want to pay taxes like a lot of very rich people. So he borrows against the values of his shares. And so as the shares go down, that can create some financial difficulties. But yes, I think compared to people who aren't the world's richest person, those financial difficulties are probably manageable
for him. So that's compared to everyone on the planet.
Compared to everyone else, yes. But the thing about being the world's richest person is that I don't think you get there without caring an extreme amount about how much money you have. So he may also be particularly sensitive to declines in his net worth. I think the amount that he's going to lose from X probably is capped at how much he paid for it, unless he's going to reinvest more money into it. But why it's not capped is that he is trashing his reputation and as a result, shrinking his customer base already for Teslas.
Because, well, yeah, you're right. With Tesla, you always think of people who care about the climate and are probably lefties or people who care about the environment and probably vote for people who care about the environment.
Exactly. So there's that. And then the other question that I wonder about is, you know, the other big source of actual revenue is that he has all of these contracts with the United States government, the military, NASA, to launch rockets through SpaceX. And you wonder at what point when you're, you know, accusing the president of treason, making all of these false accusations about immigration, kind of doing whatever you can to sort of foment unrest, at what point do you say, well, that person also shouldn't be dealing or in charge of all of these extremely sensitive rocketry contracts that we have.
And also satellites that he owns, right?
Yeah, they have both the satellites from the Starlink system, mm-hmm. which is providing internet and is already has a lot of sort of geopolitical impacts as far as like what areas of Ukraine is he going to allow the internet?
Yeah, some crucial times he stopped their use so that they couldn't go after Russian territory.
That's right. And so I think there's a lot of questions where this could end up having an impact on him financially. Not so much in, you know, is he going to be able to afford his next meal, but it could weigh on him and his own ambitions for his wealth.
Judd, is there some other area too, either besides Musk or some other Musk area that you want to get into?
I do have a different story that I think would would be interesting to you and maybe your listeners if you wanted to talk about something else.
Sure. What would that be?
Well, this one involves a person I know is one of your favorite people, Senator Ted Cruz,
mm-hmm.
who is running for re-election
right
now. And as we know from the Citizens United decision, there's not that many rules about what you can do to raise money anymore, who you can get it from, how you can spend it. You have these super PACs now that can take unlimited money from corporations, from anyone else, and spend it pretty much however they want. Pretty open season out there.
Yeah, they just can't coordinate with you.
That's right. There is one kind of big caveat which says, if you are running for office, if you're Ted Cruz, you cannot solicit, receive, direct, or transfer funds to your super PAC. You've got to let them raise the money. You know, you also can't coordinate directly with them.
You can't coordinate with other super PACs. So if a super PAC is raising to help Ted Cruz, they can't communicate with the Cruz campaign.
Yeah. So what happened was in 2020, Ted Cruz started a podcast. It was called Verdict with Ted Cruz. He started it to defend Trump, who was getting impeached at the time. But he's kept it going. Apparently, this is popular. There's people who like nothing more than to sit back and relax with an hour or two of Ted Cruz holding forth on different issues. So he's kept this going on. And then he was doing it for a while. And then in October 2022, he struck a deal with iHeartRadio. It's a big syndicate. And he said during the announcement that iHeart was going to fund production and you know, help market this. Okay, so that also maybe was a little surprising that this podcast is so popular.
This raises a question. I know you can write books. I did one. But I'm not sure you can do this.
Well, he says he's doing it for free.
Ah.
Right? So that's how he got around that. He says, I'm a volunteer.
Okay.
I'm just doing this because I need to communicate, you know, with my constituents and other people around America. I want them to know the truth.
Well, that's big-hearted of him.
So then that's where this gets really interesting, is that over the course of the last year, we've learned through one of the super PAC FEC filings, this was just filed earlier, the most recent of which was just filed earlier this month, that iHeartRadio, who was producing this podcast, had paid Truth and Courage PAC, which is the super PAC that is devoted to reelecting Ted Cruz, $630,000. When they were asked about this, they said that this is money that's associated with advertising that airs during Cruz's podcast. So the question is, and by the way, iHeartRadio has never donated to any other super PAC like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they make some regular PAC donations. Those are like $5,000 donations to different candidates, but they've never done anything like this with anybody else.
Yeah, this sounds pretty borderline to me.
Yeah. So someone told them, directed them to take this money that they were making, or a portion of the money that they were making from Ted Cruz's podcast, and to send it to Ted Cruz's super PAC. Now, this is going to be very helpful to Ted Cruz. In fact, it constituted the majority of the money that the super PAC had raised over that period.
I can imagine.
That money is now going to be critical. I mean, I think Ted Cruz is favored, but it will be a competitive race. They're certainly not taking it for granted.
It's Colin Allred.
Yeah, that's right.
Great, great candidate.
And he's actually outraising Cruz on the actual campaign side.
Right.
So they're going to need the super PAC. So anyway, this is, I think, something to keep an eye on. There's already been a couple of complaints with the Ethics Commission about this, the Senate Ethics Committee. Whether that goes anywhere, I think, is an open question. The other thing that's interesting is that iHeart Radio spends a lot of time lobbying Congress on different issues. And one of their issues is, you know, they own a lot of AM radio stations, and they were concerned that auto manufacturers had stopped including the ability, you know, AM radios in their cars.
Really?
Because that could obviously impact the value of an AM radio station.
That seems really odd. I mean, a lot of people listen to AM radio when they're driving around.
It is true. And so maybe it's a good thing to keep it in there. You know, I think that's it. But they were concerned. Cruise happened to sponsor legislation prohibiting automakers from getting rid of it.
Yeah.
The point is that you as a member of Congress are not allowed to take unlimited corporate donations. And this is really why, because you wouldn't want a corporation to be able to give a member of Congress, you know, $1 million directly to help their campaign in exchange for something else. That's why we have that prohibition.
That's why we have super PACs.
And that's why we have super PACs allow you to get around that, but they're supposed to be some kind of wall between them so that you can't say, hey, iHeartRadio or whatever company, go and send that money to my super PAC. That's why they have the prohibition of the directing, because if you didn't have that prohibition, there would be basically no campaign finance laws at all, which effectively is what's going on here. You know, it's clear that Cruz or someone who represents Cruz has indicated to iHeartRadio they should send these hundreds of thousands of dollars. It'll probably be hundreds of thousands more if he keeps this up before the election. And that's essentially what we have. So I think it's an interesting story, both because it shows you the sorry state of affairs of our campaign finance system, but also it could have a real impact, you know, on this next election, because I think Texas will probably be reasonably competitive, and the Senate is going to be decided by, you know, one or two seats, just like it is now.
And this is really one of the best hopes for a pickup for Democrats.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, I think the races have been pretty close there. And what people think is a strong candidate, raising a lot of money, seems fairly popular. So,
yeah, it's a very bad map. It's a very bad map for Democrats this cycle. That's one of the few, I guess Florida too.
Yeah.
Are what we're looking at. But we have vulnerabilities in a lot of different states. So
West Virginia is already
That's gone.
Gone. So that brings you back down to 50-50 when you're at a starting point. And yeah, almost all the competitive races besides those two, Florida and Texas, are all currently held by Democrats. So you either have to sweep all of those, or you've got to pick one up.
Yeah, and it's Ohio, and it's Wisconsin, and it's Nevada, and it's Montana.
Yep.
Pennsylvania, too.
Yep.
So we got to sweep all of those and pick up one if we're going to keep the majority.
Well, you could sweep all of those, and if Biden won, you would then have 50-50, and you could maintain control that way.
Yeah. Yeah, sweep all of them. And then you wouldn't have to beat anybody either, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But that's a lot of you know, you're talking about winning statewide races in Ohio and Montana and things like that. And it can happen because obviously you have incumbents there, but it's definitely not easy at all.
Okay. Well, thank you, Judd. And I urge everyone to subscribe to Popular Information. How many? You said so, but tell me again, how many subscribers?
320,000.
Gee whiz. Okay. If I run again, can you give some of that to my pack? My super pack?
Apparently so. Yeah. Apparently so. I'll send it right over to the super pack.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.